out of balance on the point of the sword, aware that you would be mortally cut when you slid from that position. The price you pay for seizing such power. Honored Matres ignored this inevitable fate, hewing and slashing around them like a giant in the throes of terrible hysteria. Nothing ever before had opposed them successfully, and they chose to respond now with a killing rage of berserkers, hysteria by choice, deliberate. Because we left our Bashar on Dune to spend his pitiful force in a suicidal defense? No telling how many honored Matres he killed. And Busmali at the death of Lampadas. Surely the hunters felt his sting. Not to mention Idaho-trained males we send out to pass along honored Matre techniques of sexual enslavement. And to men. Was that enough to bring such rage? Possibly. But what are the stories from Gamu? Did Teg display a new talent that terrified honored Matres? If we restore our Basha's memories, we must watch him carefully. Would a no-ship contain him? What really made honored Matres so reactive? They wanted blood. Never bring such people bad news. No wonder their minions behaved with frenzy. A powerful person in fright might kill the bearer of bad tidings. Bring no bad tidings, better to die in battle. Spider Queen's people went beyond arrogance, far beyond. No censure possible. You might just as well berate a cow for eating grass. A cow would be justified in looking at you with its moonstruck eyes, inquiring, "Isn't this what I'm supposed to do?" Knowing probable consequences, why did we ignite them? We aren't like the person who hits out at a round grey object with a stick and finds that the object was a hornet's nest. We knew what we struck. Taraz's plan, and none of us questioned. The Sisterhood faced an enemy whose deliberate policy was hysterical violence. We will run amok. And what would happen if honored Matres met painful defeat? What would their hysteria become? I fear it. Did the Sisterhood dare feed this fire? We must. Spider Queen would redouble her efforts to find Chapter House. Violence would escalate to an even more repulsive stage. What then? Would honored Matres suspect everyone and anyone of being sympathetic to the Bene Gesserit? Might they not turn against their own supporters? Did they contemplate being alone in a universe devoid of other sentient life? More likely, this did not even enter their minds. What do you look like, Spider Queen? How do you think? Mabella said she did not know her supreme commander or even sub-commanders of her Hormu order. But Mabella provided a suggestive description of a sub-commander's quarters. Informative. What does a person call home? Who does she keep close to share life's little homilies? Most of us choose our companions and surroundings to reflect ourselves. Mabella said, "One of her personal servants took me into the private area, showing off, demonstrating that she had access to the sanctum. The public area was neat and clean, but the private rooms were messy. Clothing left where it had been dropped, unguent jars open, bed unmade, food drying in dishes on the floor. I asked why they had not cleaned up this mess. She said it was not her job. The one who cleaned was allowed into the quarters just before nightfall." Secret vulgarities. Such a one would have a mind to match that private display. Odraid's eyes snapped open. She focused on the Van Gogh painting. My choice. It put tensions on the long span of human history that other memory could not. You sent me a message, Vincent, and because of you, I will not cut off my ear or send useless love messages to ones who do not care. That's the least I can do to honor you. The sleeping cell had a familiar odor, peppery pungency of carnation. Odraid's favorite floral perfume. Attendants kept it here as a nasal background. Once more, she closed her eyes and her thoughts snapped back to Spider Queen. Odraid felt this exercise creating another dimension to that faceless woman. Mabella said an honored Matre commander had but to give an order, and anything she wanted was brought. Anything? Mabella described known instances, grossly distorted sexual partners, cloying sweetmeats, emotional orgies ignited by performances of extraordinary violence. They're always looking for extremes. Reports of spies and agents fleshed out Mabella's semi-admiring accounts. Everyone says they have a right to rule. Those women evolved from an autocratic bureaucracy. Much evidence confirmed it. Mabella spoke of history lessons that said early honored matres conducted research to gain sexual dominance over their populations. When taxation became too threatening to those they governed. A right to rule? It did not appear to Odraid that these women insisted on such a right. No. They assumed that their rightness must never be questioned. Never. No decisions wrong. Disregard consequences. It never happened. Odraid sat upright on her cot, knowing she had found the insight she sought. Mistakes never happen. That would require an extremely large bag of unconsciousness to contain it. Very tiny consciousness then peering out at a tumultuous universe they themselves created. Oh, lovely. Odraid summoned her night attendant, a first stage acolyte, and asked for mélange tea containing a dangerous stimulant, something to help her delay the body's demands for sleep, but at a cost. The acolyte hesitated before obeying. She returned in a moment with the mug steaming on a small tray. Odraid had decided long ago that mélange tea made with the deep, cold water of Chapter House had a taste that worked its way into her psyche. The bitter stimulant deprived her of that refreshing taste and gnawed at her conscience. Word would go out from the ones who watched. Worry, worry, worry. Would Proctors take another vote? She sipped slowly, giving the stimulant time to work. Condemned woman rejects last dinner, sips tea. Presently she put aside the empty mug and called for warm clothing. I'm going for a walk in the orchards. The night attendant made no comment. Everyone knew she often went walking there, even at night. Within minutes, she was in the narrow, link-fenced path to her favourite orchard, her way lighted by a mini-globe fixed on a short cord to her right shoulder. A small herd of the sisterhood's black cattle came up to the fence beside Odraid and gazed at her as she passed. She looked at the wet muzzles, inhaled the rich smell of alfalfa in the steam of their breathing, and paused. The cows sniffed and sensed the pheromone that told them to accept her. They went back to eating forage piled near the fence by herdsmen. Turning her back on the cattle, Odraid looked at leafless trees across from the pasture. Her mini-globe drew a circle of yellow light that emphasized winter starkness. Few understood why this place attracted her. It was not enough to say she found troubled thoughts soothed here, even in winter, with frost crunching underfoot. This orchard was a hard-bought silence between storms. She extinguished her mini-globe and let her feet follow the familiar way in darkness. Occasionally, she glanced up at starlight defined by leafless branches. Storms. She felt one approaching that no meteorologist could anticipate. Storms beget storms. Rage begets rage. Revenge begets revenge. Wars beget wars. The old Basha had been a master at breaking those circles. Would his Gola still have that talent? What a perilous gamble. Odraid looked back at the cattle, a dark blob of movement and starlighted steam. They had herded close for warmth, and she heard a familiar grinding as they chewed their cuds. I must go south into the desert, face to face with Shiana there. The sand trout thrive. Why are there no sandworms? She spoke aloud to the cattle clustered by the fence. Eat your grass. It's what you're supposed to do. If a spying watchdog chanced on that remark, Odraid knew she would have serious explaining to do. But I have seen through to the heart of our enemy this night, and I pity them. To know a thing well, know its limits. Only when pushed beyond its tolerances will true nature be seen. The Umtal rule. Do not depend only on theory if your life is at stake. Bene Gesserit commentary. Duncan Idaho stood almost in the center of the no-ship's practice floor and 3 paces from the Gola child. Sophisticated training instruments were near at hand, some exhausting, some dangerous. The child looked admiring and trusting this morning. Do I understand him better because I too am a Gola? A questionable assumption. This one has been brought up in a way much different from the one they designed for me. Designed. The precise term. The sisterhood had copied as much of Teg's original childhood as possible, even to an adoring younger companion standing in for the long-lost brother, and Odraid giving him the deep teaching, as Teg's birth mother did. Idaho remembered the aged Basha whose cells had produced this man, a thoughtful man whose comments were to be heeded. With only a slight effort, Idaho recalled the man's manner and words.
The true warrior often understands his enemy better than he understands his friends. A dangerous pitfall if you let understanding lead to sympathy, as it will naturally do when left unguided.
Difficult to think of the mind behind those words as latent somewhere in this child. The Basha had been so insightful, teaching about sympathies on that long-ago day in the Gamu Keep.
Sympathy for the enemy, a weakness of police and armies alike. Most perilous are the unconscious sympathies, directing you to preserve your enemy intact because the enemy is your justification for existence.
Sir? How could that piping voice become the commanding tones of the old Basha?
What is it?
Why are you just standing there looking at me?
I call the Basha Old Reliability. Did you know that?
Yes, sir. I've studied the story of his life.
Was it young reliability now?
Why did Odraid want his original memories restored so quickly?
Because of the Basha, the entire sisterhood has been digging into other memory, revising their views of history. Did they tell you that?
No, sir. Is it important for me to know? Mother Superior said you would train my muscles.
You liked to drink Danyan Marinette, a very fine brandy, I recall.
I'm too young to drink, sir.
You were a Mentat. Do you know what that means?
I'll know when you restore my memories, won't I?
No respectful sir, calling the teacher to task for unwanted delays.
Idaho smiled and got a grin in response. An engaging child, easy to show him natural affection.
Watch out for him, Odraid had said. He's a charmer.
Idaho recalled Odraid's briefing before bringing the child.
Since every individual is accountable ultimately to the self, she said, the formation of that self demands our utmost care and attention. Is that necessary with a Gola?
They had been in Idaho's sitting room that night, Mobella, a fascinated listener.
He will remember everything you teach him.
So we do a little editing of the original.
Careful, Duncan. Give a bad time to an impressionable child. Teach that child not to trust anyone, and you create a suicide. Slow or fast suicide doesn't make any difference. Are you forgetting that I knew the Basha?
Don't you remember, Duncan, how it was before your memories were restored?
I knew the Basha could do it, and I thought of him as my salvation.
And that's how he sees you. It's a special kind of trust.
I'll treat him honestly.
You may think you act from honesty, but I advise you to look deeply into yourself every time you come face to face with his trust.
And if I make a mistake?
We will correct it, if possible. She glanced up at the comm eyes and back to him.
I know you'll be watching us.
Don't let it inhibit you. I'm not trying to make you self-conscious, just cautious. And remember that my sisterhood has efficient methods of healing.
I'll be cautious.
You might remember it was the Basha who said, the ferocity we display to our foes is always tempered by the lesson we hope to teach.
I can't think of him as a foe. The Basha was one of the finest men I've ever known.
Excellent. I'll place him in your hands. And here the child was on the practice floor, getting more than a little impatient with his teacher's hesitations.
Sir, is this part of a lesson, just standing here? I know sometimes—
Be still.
Teg came to military attention. No one had taught him that. This was from his original memories. Idaho was suddenly fascinated by this glimpse of the Basha.
They knew he would catch me this way.
Never underestimate Bene Gesserit persuasiveness. You could find yourself doing things for them without knowing pressures had been applied. Subtle and damnable.
There were compensations, of course. You lived in interesting times, as the ancient curse, Benison, had it. All in all, Idaho decided, he preferred interesting times. Even these times. He took a deep breath.
Restoring your original memories will cause pain, physical and mental. In some ways, the mental pains are worse. I am to prepare you for that.
Still at attention, no comment.
We will begin without weapons, using an imaginary blade in your right hand. This is a variation on the five attitudes. Each response arises before the need. Drop your arms to your sides and relax.
Moving behind Teg, Idaho grasped the child's right arm below the elbow and demonstrated the first movements.
Each attacker is a feather floating on an infinite path. As the feather approaches, it is diverted and removed. Your response is like a puff of air blowing the feather away.
Idaho stepped aside and observed as Teg repeated the movements, correcting occasionally with a sharp blow to an offending muscle.
Let your body do the learning,
when Teg asked why he did that. In a rest period, Teg wanted to know what Idaho meant by mental pains.
You have Gola-imposed walls around your original memories. At the proper moment, some of those memories will come flooding back. Not all memories will be pleasant.
Mother Superior says the Basha restored your memories.
Gods of the deep, child, why do you keep saying the Basha? That was you.
But I don't know that yet.
You present a special problem. For a Gola to reawaken, there should be memory of death. But the cells for you do not carry death memory.
But the Basha is dead.
The Basha. Yes, he's dead. You must feel that where it hurts most, and know that you are the Basha.
Can you really give me back that memory?
If you can stand the pain. Do you know what I said to you when you restored my memories? I said, Atreides, you're all so damned alike.
You hated me?
Yes, and you were disgusted with yourself for what you did to me. Does that give you any idea of what I must do?
Yes, sir.
Very low. Mother Superior says I must not betray your trust. Yet you betrayed my trust.
But I restored your memories.
See how easy it is to think of yourself as Basha? You were shocked. And yes, you restored my memories.
That's all I want.
So you say.
Mother Superior says you're a Mentat. Will that help? That I was a Mentat too?
Logic says yes, but we Mentats have a saying that logic moves blindly, and we're aware there's a logic that kicks you out of the nest into chaos.
I know what chaos means.
Very proud of himself.
So you think?
And I trust you.
Listen to me. We are servants of the Bene Gesserit. Reverend mothers did not build their order on trust.
Shouldn't I trust Mother Superior?
Within limits, you will learn and appreciate. For now, I warn you, the Bene Gesserit work under a system of organized distrust. Have they taught you about democracy?
Yes, sir. That's where you vote for...
That's where you distrust anyone with power over you. The sisters know it well. Don't trust too much.
Then I should not trust you either.
The only trust you can place in me is that I will do my best to restore your original memories.
Then I don't care how much it hurts.
He looked up at the Comeyes, knowledge of their purpose in his expression.
Do they mind that you say these things about them?
Their feelings don't concern a Mentat except as data.
Does that mean fact?
Facts are fragile. A Mentat can get tangled in them. Too much reliable data. It's like diplomacy. You need a few good lies to get at your projections.
I'm confused.
He used the word hesitantly, not sure it was what he meant.
I said that once to Mother Superior. She said, I've been behaving badly.
You're not supposed to confuse me?
Unless it teaches.
And when Teg still looked puzzled, Idaho said,
Let me tell you a story.
Teg immediately sat on the floor, an action revealing that O'Drade often used the same technique. Good. Teg already was receptive.
In one of my lives I had a dog that hated clams,
Idaho said.
I've had clams. They come from the Great Sea.
Yes, well, my dog hated clams because one of them had the temerity to spit in his eye. That stings. But even worse, it was an innocent hole in the sand that did the spitting. No clam visible.
What did your dog do?
Leaning forward, chin on fist.
He dug up the offender and brought it to me.
Idaho grinned.
Lesson one, don't let the unknown spit in your eye.
Teg laughed and clapped his hands.
Look at it from the dog's viewpoint. Go after the spitter, then, glorious reward, master is pleased.
Did your dog dig more clams?
Every time we went to the beach. He went growling after spitters and master took them away, never to be seen again except as empty shells with bits of meat still clinging to the insides.
You ate them?
See it as the dog did. Spitters get their just punishment. He has a way to rid his world of offensive things, and master is pleased with him.
Teg demonstrated his brightness.
Do the sisters think of us as dogs?
In a way. Never forget it. When you get back to your rooms, look up Laissez Majesté. It helps place our relationship to our masters.
Teg looked up at the commis and back to Idaho, but said nothing. Idaho lifted his attention to the door behind Teg and said,
That story was for you, too.
Teg jumped to his feet, turning and expecting to see Mother Superior, but it was only Mabella. She was leaning against the wall near the door.
Bell won't like you talking about the sisterhood that way, she said.
Adrade told me I have a free hand.
He looked at Teg.
We've wasted enough time on stories. Let me see if your body has learned anything.
An odd feeling of excitement had come over Mabella as she entered the training area and saw Duncan with the child. She watched for a time, aware that she was seeing him in a new and almost Bene Gesserit light. Mother Superior's briefing came out in Duncan's candle with Teg. Extremely odd sensation, this new awareness, as though she had come a full step away from her former associates. The feeling was poignant with loss. Mabella found herself missing strange things in her former life. Not the hunting in the streets, seeking new males to captivate and bring under Onan Matre control. The powers that came from creating sexual addicts had lost their savour under Bene Gesserit teaching and her experiences with Duncan. She admitted to missing one element of that power, though, the sense of belonging to a force nothing could stop. It was both abstract and specific. Not the recurrent conquests, but the expectation of inevitable victory that came in part from the drug she shared with Onad Matre sisters. As the need waned in the shift to mélange, she saw the old addiction from a different perspective. Bene Gesserit chemists, tracing the adrenaline substitute from samples of her blood, held it ready if she required it. She knew she did not. Another withdrawal plagued her. Not the captivated males, but the flow of them. Something within her said this was gone forever. She would never re-experience it. New knowledge had changed her past. She had prowled the corridors between her quarters and the practice floor this morning, wanting to watch Duncan with the child, afraid her presence might interfere. This prowling was a thing she often did these days after the more strenuous of her morning lessons with a reverend mother teacher. Thoughts of Onad Matres were much with her at these times. She could not escape this feeling of loss. It was an emptiness such that she wondered if anything could possibly fill it. The sensation was worse than that of growing old. Growing old as an Onad Matre had offered its compensations. Powers gathered in that sisterhood had a tendency to grow rapidly with age. Not that. It was an absolute loss.
I have been defeated.
Onad Matres never contemplated defeat. Mabella felt herself forced to it. She knew Onad Matres were sometimes slain by enemies. Those enemies always paid. It was the law. Whole planets blackened to get one offender. Mabella knew Onad Matres hunted for Chapter House. As a matter of former loyalties, she was aware she should be assisting those hunters. The poignancy of her personal defeat lay in the fact that she did not want the Bene Gesserit to pay the remembered price.
The Bene Gesserit are too valuable.
They were infinitely valuable to Onad Matres. Mabella doubted that any other Onad Matre even suspected this. Vanity. That was the judgment she attached to her former sisters.
And to myself as I was.
A terrible pride.
It had grown out of being subjugated so many generations before they gained their own ascendancy. Mabella had tried to convey this to Adraid, recounting from history taught by honored matres.
"The slave makes an awful master," Adraid said.
There was an honored matre pattern, Mabella realized. She had accepted it once, but now rejected it, and could not give all of her reasons for this change.
"I have grown out of those things. They would be childish to me now."
Duncan once more had stopped the practice session. Perspiration poured from both teacher and student. They stood panting, regaining breath, an odd exchange of looks between them.
Conspiracy?
The child looked strangely mature. Mabella recalled O'Drade's comment.
"Maturity imposes its own behavior. One of our lessons, make those imperatives available to consciousness. Modify instincts."
"They have modified me, and will do so even more."
She could see the same thing at work in Duncan's behavior with the Gola child.
"This is an activity that creates many stresses in the societies we influence,"
O'Drade had said.
"That forces us to constant adjustments. But how can they adjust to my former sisters?"
O'Drade revealed characteristic sang-froid when braced with this question.
"We face major adjustments because of our past activities. It was the same during the reign of the tyrant." "Adjustments?"
Duncan was talking to the child. Mabella moved closer to listen.
"You've been exposed to the story of Muad'Dib?
Good.
You're an Atreides, and that includes flaws."
"Does that mean mistakes, sir?"
"You're damn right it does. Never choose a course just because it offers the opportunity for a dramatic gesture."
"Is that how I died?"
He had the child thinking of his former self in the first person.
"You be the judge, but it was always an Atreides weakness. Attractive things, gestures. Die on the horns of a great bull as Muad'Dib's grandfather did. A grand spectacle for his people, the stuff of stories for generations. You can even hear bits of it around after all of these eons."
"Mother Superior told me that story."
"Your birth mother probably told it to you too."
The child shuddered.
"It gives me a funny feeling when you say birth mother."
Awe in his young voice.
"Funny feelings are one thing. This lesson is another. I'm talking about something with a persistent label. The Desian gesture. It used to be a Treadesian, but that's too cumbersome."
Once more the child touched that core of mature awareness.
"Even a dog's life has its price."
Mabella caught her breath, glimpsing how it would be, an adult mind in that child's body. Disconcerting.
"Your birth mother was Janet Roxburgh of the Linnaeus Roxburghs,"
Idaho said.
"She was Bene Gesserit. Your father was Losky Teg, a Choam station factor. In a few minutes I'm going to show you the Bashar's favourite picture of his home on Linnaeus. I want you to keep it with you and study it. Think of it as your favourite place."
Teg nodded, but the expression on his face said he was afraid. Was it possible the great Mentat warrior had known fear? Mabella shook her head. She had an intellectual knowledge of what Duncan was doing, but felt gaps in the accounts. This was something she might never experience. What would the feeling be, reawakening to new life with the memories of another lifetime intact? Much different from a reverend mother's other memory, she suspected.
"Mind at its beginning," Duncan called it. "Awakening of your true self. I felt I had been plunged into a magic universe. My awareness was a circle and then a globe. Arbitrary forms became transient. The table was not a table. But I fell into a trance. Everything around me had a shimmering quality. Nothing was real. This passed, and I felt I had lost the one reality. My table was a table once more."
She had studied the Bene Gesserit manual on awakening Agola's original memories. Duncan was diverging from those instructions. Why? He left the child and approached Mabella.
"I have to talk to Shiana," he said as he passed her. "There's got to be a better way."
Ready comprehension is often a knee-jerk response and the most dangerous form of understanding. It blinks an opaque screen over your ability to learn. The judgmental precedents of law function that way, littering your path with dead ends. Be warned, understand nothing.
all comprehension is temporary. Mentat fix, adacto. Idaho, seated alone at his console, encountered an entry he had stored in ship systems during his first days of confinement, and found himself dumped, he applied the word later, into attitudes and sensory awareness of that earlier time. It no longer was afternoon of a frustrating day in the no-ship. He was back there, stretched between then and now, the way serial Gola lives linked this incarnation to his original birth. Immediately he saw what he had come to call the net, and the elderly couple defined by criss-crossed lines, bodies visible through a shimmering of jeweled ropes, green, blue, gold, and a silver so brilliant it made his eyes ache. He sensed godlike stability in these people, but something common about them. The word ordinary came to mind. The by now familiar garden landscape stretched out behind them. Floral bushes. Roses, he thought, rolling lawns, tall trees. The couple stared back at him with an intensity that made Idaho feel naked. New power in the vision. It no longer was confined to the great hold, an increasingly compulsive magnet drawing him down there so frequently he knew the watchdogs were alerted. Is he another Kwisatz Haderach? There was a level of suspicion the Bene Gesserit could achieve that would kill him if it grew, and they were watching him now. Questions, worried speculations. Despite this, he could not turn away from the vision. Why did that elderly couple look so familiar? Someone from his past? Family? Mentat riffling of his memories produced nothing to fit the speculation. Round faces, abbreviated chins, fat wrinkles at the jowls, dark eyes. The net obscured their colour. The woman wore a long blue and green dress that concealed her feet. A white apron stained with green covered the dress from ample bosom to just below her waist. Garden tools dangled from apron loops. She carried a trowel in her left hand. Her hair was grey. Wisps of it had escaped a confining green scarf and blew around her eyes, emphasizing laughter lines there. She appeared grandmotherly. The man suited her as though created by the same artist as a perfect match. Bib overalls over a mounded stomach. No hat. Those same dark eyes with reflections twinkling in them. A brush of close-cropped, wiry grey hair. He had the most benign expression Idaho had ever seen, up-curved smile creases at the corners of his mouth. He held a small shovel in his left hand, and on his extended right palm he balanced what appeared to be a small metal ball. The ball emitted a piercing whistle that made Idaho clap his hands over his ears. This did not stop the sound. It faded away of itself. He lowered his hands. Reassuring faces. That thought aroused Idaho's suspicions, because now he recognized the familiarity. They looked somewhat like face dancers, even to the pug noses. He leaned forward, but the vision kept its distance. Face dancers, he whispered. Net and elderly couple vanished. They were replaced by Mirbella in practice floor leotards of glistening ebony. He had to reach out and touch her before he could believe she really stood there.
Duncan, what is it? You're all sweaty.
I think it's something the damned Tleilaxu planted in me. I keep seeing, I think they're face dancers. They look at me, and just now, a whistle. It hurt.
She glanced up at the comm eyes, but did not appear worried. This was something the sisters could know without it presenting immediate dangers. Except possibly to Sightail. She sank to her haunches beside him and put a hand on his arm.
Something they did to your body in the tanks?
No. But you said, my body's not just a piece of new baggage for this trip. It has all of the chemistry and substance I ever had. It's my mind that's different.
That worried her. She knew the Bene Gesserit concern over wild talents.
Damn that Sightail. I'll find it, he said.
He closed his eyes and heard Mirbella stand. Her hand went away from his arm.
Maybe you shouldn't do that, Duncan.
She sounded far away.
Memory,
Where did they hide the secret thing? Deep in the original cells?
Until this moment, he had thought of his memory as a mentat tool. He could call up his own images from long-ago moments in front of mirrors, close up examining an age wrinkle, looking at a woman behind him, two faces in the mirror and his face full of questions. Faces. A succession of masks, different views of this person he called myself. Slightly imbalanced faces. Hair sometimes grey, sometimes the jet caracal of his current life, sometimes humorous, sometimes grave and seeking inward for wisdom to meet a new day. Somewhere in all of that lay a consciousness that observed and deliberated, someone who made choices. The Tleilaxu had tampered with that. Idaho felt his blood pumping hard, a new danger was present. This was what he was intended to experience, but not by the Tleilaxu. He had been born with it.
This is what it means to be alive.
No memory from his other lives, nothing that Tleilaxu had done to him, none of that changed his deepest awareness one whit. He opened his eyes. Mabella still stood near, but her expression was veiled.
So that's how she will look as a reverend mother.
He did not like this change in her.
What happens if the Bene Gesserit fail? He asked.
When she did not reply, he nodded.
Yes, that's the worst assumption. The sisterhood down history's sewer pipe. And you don't want that, my beloved?
He could see it in her face when she turned and left him. Looking up at the Comeyes, he said,
Dar, I must talk to you. Dar.
No response from any of the mechanisms around him. He had not expected one. Still, he knew he could talk to her, and she would have to listen.
I've been coming at our problem from the other direction, he said.
And he imagined the busy whirring of recorders as they spun the sounds of his voice into Redulian crystals.
I've been getting into the minds of honored Matres. I know I've done it. Mirbella resonates.
That would alert them. He had an honored Matre of his own. But had was not the proper word. He did not have Mabella, not even in bed. They had each other, matched the way those people in his vision appeared to be matched. Was that what he saw there? Two older people, sexually trained by honored matres?
I look at another issue now, he said. How to overcome the Bene Gesserit.
That threw down the gauntlet.
Episodes, he said. A word Odraid was fond of using. That's how we have to see what's happening to us. Little episodes. Even the worst-case assumption has to be screened against that background. The scattering has a magnitude that dwarfs anything we do.
There. That demonstrated his value to the sisters.
It put honored Matres in a better perspective. They were back here in the old empire, fellow dwarves.
He knew Odraid would see it. Bell would make her see it. Somewhere out there in the infinite universe, a jury had brought in a verdict against honored Matres. Law and its managers had not prevailed for the hunters. He suspected that his vision had shown him two of the jurors. And if they were face dancers, they were not Cytale's face dancers. Those two people behind the shimmering net belonged to no one but themselves.
Major flaws in government arise from a fear of making radical internal changes, even though a need is clearly seen. Darwi Odraid. For Odraid, the first mélange of the morning was always different. Her flesh responded like a starveling who clutched at sweet fruit. Then followed the slow, penetrating and painful restoration. This was the fearful thing about mélange addiction. She stood at the window of her sleeping chamber, waiting for the effect to run its course. Weather control, she noted, had achieved another morning rain. The landscape was washed clean, everything immersed in a romantic haze, all edges blurred and reduced to essences like old memories. She opened the window. Damp, cold air blew across her face, drawing recollections around her the way one put on a familiar garment. She inhaled deeply. Smells after a rain. She remembered the essentials of life amplified and smoothed by falling water, but these rains were different. They left a flinty after-smell she could taste. Odraid did not like it.
The message was not of things washed clean, but of life resentful, wanting all rain stopped and locked away. This rain no longer gentled and brought fullness. It carried inescapable awareness of change. O'Drade closed the window. At once she was back in the familiar odours of her quarters, and that constant smell of shear from the metering implants required of everyone who knew the location of Chapter House. She heard Streggy enter, the slip-slip sounds of the desert map being changed. An efficient sound in Streggy's movements. Weeks of close association had confirmed O'Drade's first judgment, reliable. Not brilliant, but supremely sensitive to Mother Superior's needs. Look how quietly she moved. Transfer Streggy's sensitivity to the needs of young Teg, and they had his required height and mobility. A horse? Much more. O'Drade's melange assimilation reached its peak and subsided. Streggy's reflection in the window showed her waiting for assignment. She knew these moments were given over to the spice. At her stage, she would be looking forward to the day when she entered this mysterious enhancement.
I wish her well of it.
Most Reverend Mothers followed the teaching and seldom thought of their spice as addiction. O'Drade knew it every morning for what it was. You took your spice during the day as your body demanded, following a pattern of early training, dosage minimal, just enough to wet the metabolic system and drive it into peak performance. Biological necessities meshed more smoothly with melange. Food tasted better. Barring accident or fatal assault, you lived much longer than you could without it, but you were addicted. Her body restored, O'Drade blinked and considered Streggy. Curiosity about the morning's long ritual was plain in her. Speaking to Streggy's reflection in the window, O'Drade said,
Have you learned about melange withdrawal?
Yes, Mother Superior.
Despite warnings to keep awareness of addiction low-key, it was never more than an eye-blink away from O'Drade, and she felt the accumulated resentments. Mental preparations as an acolyte, firmly impressed in the agony, had been eroded by other memory and accumulations of time. The admonition, withdrawal removes an essential of your life, and if it occurs in late middle age, can kill you. How little that meant now.
Withdrawal has intense meaning for me, O'Drade said. I am one of those for whom the morning melange is painful. I am sure they told you this happens.
I'm sorry, Mother Superior.
O'Drade studied the map. It showed a long finger of desert thrusting northward and producing widening of dry lands to the southeast of Central, where Shiana had her station. Presently, O'Drade returned her attention to Streggy, who was watching Mother Superior with new interest.
Brought up short by thoughts of the spice's darker side.
The uniqueness of melange is seldom considered in our age, O'Drade said. All of the old narcotics in which humans have indulged possess a remarkable factor in common, all except the spice. They all brought shorter life and pain.
We were told, Mother Superior.
But you probably were not told that a fact of governance could be obscured by our concern with honored matres. There's an energy greed in governments, yes, even in ours, that can dump you into a trap. If you serve me, you will feel it in your guts, because every morning you will watch me suffer. Let knowledge of it sink into you, this deadly trap. Don't become uncaring pushers, caught in a system that displaces life with careless death as honored matres do. Remember, acceptable narcotics can be taxed to pay salaries or otherwise create jobs for uncaring functionaries.
Streggy was puzzled.
But melange extends our lives, increases health, and arouses appetites for...
She was stopped by O'Drade's scowl.
Right out of the Acolyte Manual.
It has this other side, Streggy, and you see it in me. The Acolyte Manual does not lie, but melange is a narcotic, and we are addicted.
I know it's not gentle with everyone, Mother Superior, but you said honored matres don't use it.
The substitute they employ replaces melange with few benefits except to prevent withdrawal, agonies, and death. It is parallel addictive.
And the captive?
Mabella used it and now she uses melange. They are interchangeable.
Interesting. I suppose we will learn more of this. I notice, Mother Superior, that you never call them whores.
As acolytes do?
Ah, Streggy,
Belonda has been a bad influence. Oh, I recognize the pressures.
As Streggy started to protest,
acolytes feel the threat. They look at Chapter House and think of it as their fortress for the long night of the whores.
Something like that, Mother Superior?
Extremely hesitant.
Streggy, this planet is only another temporary place. Today we go south and impress that upon you. Find Tamerlane, please, and tell her to make the arrangements we discussed for our visit to Shiana. Speak to no one else about it.
Yes, Mother Superior.
Do you mean I will accompany you? I want you by my side. Tell the one you are training that she now has full charge of my map.
As Streggy left, Odraid thought of Shiana and Idaho.
She wants to talk to him, and he wants to talk to her.
Comai analysis noted that these two sometimes conversed by hand signals while hiding most of the movements with their bodies. It had the look of an old Atreides battle language. Odraid recognized some of it, but not enough to determine content. Belonda wanted an explanation from Shiana.
Secrets!
Odraid was more cautious.
Let it go a bit. Perhaps something interesting will come of it. What does Shiana want?
Whatever Duncan had in mind, it concerned Teg. Creating the pain required for Teg to recover his original memories went against Duncan's grain. Odraid had noted this when she interrupted Duncan at his console yesterday.
You're late, Dar.
Not looking up from whatever it was he did there.
Late? It was early evening.
He had been calling her Dar frequently for several years, a goad, a reminder that he resented his fish tank existence. The goad irritated Belonda, who argued against
his damned familiarities.
He called Belonda Belle, of course. Duncan was generous with his needle. Remembering this, Odraid paused before entering her workroom. Duncan had slammed a fist into the counter beside his console.
There's got to be a better way for Teg.
A better way? What does he have in mind?
Movement down the corridor beyond the workroom brought her out of this reflection. Streggy returning from Tamerlane. Streggy entered the Acolyte ready room,
giving the word to her replacement on the desert map.
A stack of archival records waited on Odraid's table.
Belonda.
Odraid stared at the pile. No matter how much she tried to delegate, there was always this organized residue that her counselors insisted only Mother Superior could handle. Much of this new lot came from Belonda's demand for
suggestions and analyses.
Odraid touched her console.
Belle!
The voice of an archives clerk responded.
Mother Superior?
Get Belle up here. I want her in front of me as fast as her fat legs can move.
It was less than a minute. Belonda stood in front of the work table like a chastened acolyte. They all knew that tone in Mother Superior's voice. Odraid touched the stack on her table and jerked her hand back as though shocked.
What in the name of Shaitan is all of that?
We judged it significant.
You think I have to see everything and anything? Where's the keynoting? This is sloppy work, Belle. I'm not stupid and neither are you, but this, in the face of this...
I delegate as much as...
Delegate? Look at this. Which must I see and which may I delegate? Not one keynote.
I'll see that it's corrected immediately.
Indeed you will, Belle. Because Tam and I are going south today, an unannounced inspection tour and a visit with Shiana. And while I'm gone, you will sit in my chair. See how you like this daily deluge.
Will you be out of touch?
I'll have a light line and ear see at all times.
Belonda breathed easier.
I suggest, Belle, that you get back to archives and put someone in charge who will take responsibility. I'm damned if you're not beginning to act like bureaucrats, covering your asses.
Real boats rock, Dar.
Was that Belle attempting humour? All was not lost. Odraid waved a hand over her projector and there was Tamerlane in the transport hall.
Tam?
Yes?
Without turning from an assignment list.
How soon can we leave?
About 2 hours.
Call me when you're ready. Owen Streggy goes with us. Make room for her.
Odraid blanked the projection before Tamerlane could respond. There were things she should be doing, Odraid knew. Tam and Belle were not the only sources of Mother Superior's concerns.
16 planets remaining to us. and that includes Boozel. Definitely a place in peril. Only 16.
She pushed that thought aside. No time for it.
Mirbella. Should I call her and... No, that can wait. The new board of proctors? Let Bell deal with that. Community disbandings?
Siphoning personnel into a new scattering had forced consolidations.
Staying ahead of the desert.
It was depressing, and she did not feel she could face it today.
I'm always fidgety before a trip.
Abruptly, Odraid fled the workroom and went stalking the corridors, looking into how her charges were performing, pausing in doorways, noting what the students read, how they behaved in their everlasting Pranabindu exercises.
What are you reading there?
Demanded of a young second-stage acolyte at a projector in a semi-darkened room.
The diaries of Tolstoy, Mother Superior.
That knowing look in the acolyte's eyes said,
Do you have his words directly in other memory?
The question was right there on the edge of the girl's tongue. They were always trying such petty gambits when they caught her alone.
Tolstoy was a family name, Odraid snapped. By your mention of diaries, I presume you refer to Count Leo Nikolaevich.
Yes, Mother Superior,
abashedly aware of censure. Softening, Odraid threw a quotation at the girl.
I am not a river, I am a net.
He spoke those words at Yasnaya Polyana when he was only 12.
You will not find them in his diaries, but they are probably the most significant words he ever uttered.
Odraid turned away before the acolyte could thank her.
Always teaching.
She wandered down to the main kitchens then and inspected them, tracing inner edges of racked pots for grease, noting the cautious way even the teaching chef observed her progress. The kitchen was steamy with good smells from lunch preparations. There was a restorative sound of chopping and stirring, but the usual banter stopped at her entrance. She went around the long counter with its busy cooks to the teaching chef's raised platform. He was a great beefy man with prominent cheekbones, his face as florid as the meats over which he ministered. Odraid had no doubt he was one of history's great chefs. His name suited him, Placido Salat. He was assured of a warm place in her thoughts for several reasons, including the fact that he had trained her personal chef. Important visitors in the days before honored matres had received a kitchen tour and a taste of specialties.
May I introduce our senior chef, Placido Salat?
His beef Placido, low case, his choice, was the envy of many, almost raw and served with an herbed and spicy mustard sauce that did not obscure the meat. Odraid thought the dish too exotic, but never judged it aloud. When she had Salat's full attention, after a slight interruption to correct a sauce, Odraid said,
I'm hungry for something special, Placido.
He recognized the opening. This was how she always began a request for her special dish.
Perhaps an oyster stew, he suggested.
It's a dance,
Odraid thought. They both knew what she wanted.
Excellent, she agreed, and went into the required performance. But it must be treated gently, Placido. The oyster's not overcooked. Some of our own powdered dry celery in the broth.
And perhaps a bit of paprika?
I always prefer it that way. Be extremely careful with the mélange, a breath of it and no more.
Of course, Mother Superior.
Eyes rolling in horror at the thought he might use too much mélange.
So easy for the spice to dominate.
Cook the oysters in clam nectar, Placido. I would prefer you watch over them yourself, stirring gently until the edges of the oysters just start to curl.
Not a second longer, Mother Superior.
Heat some quite creamy milk on the side. Don't boil it.
Placido displayed astonishment that she might suspect him of boiling the milk for her oyster stew.
A small pat of butter in the serving bowl, Odraid said. Pour the combined broth over it.
No sherry?
How glad I am that you are taking personal charge of my special dish, Placido. I forgot the sherry.
Mother Superior never forgot anything, and they all knew it, but this was a required step in the dance.
3 ounces of sherry in the cooking broth, he said.
Heat it to get rid of the alcohol.
Of course, but we must not bruise the flavors. Would you like croutons or saltines?
Croutons, please. Seated at an alcove table, Odrade ate two bowls of oyster stew, remembering how Sea Child had savoured it. Papa had introduced her to this dish when she was barely capable of conveying spoon to mouth. He had made the stew himself, his own specialty. Odrade had taught it to Salat. She complimented Salat on the wine.
I particularly enjoyed your choice of a Chablis for accompaniment.
A flinty Chablis with a sharp edge on it, Mother Superior. One of our better vintages. It sets off the oyster flavours admirably.
Tamerlane found her in the alcove. They always knew where to find Mother Superior when they wanted her.
We are ready.
Was that displeasure on Tam's face?
Where will we stop tonight?
El Dio.
Odrade smiled. She liked El Dio.
Tam catering to me because I'm in a critical mood? Perhaps we have the makings of a small diversion.
Following Tamerlane to the transport docks, Odrade thought how characteristic it was that the older woman preferred to travel by tube. Surface trips annoyed her.
Who wants to waste time at my age?
Odrade disliked tubes for personal transport. You were so closed in and helpless. She preferred surface or air and used tubes only when speed was urgent. She had no hesitation about using smaller tubes for chits and notes.
Notes don't care just as long as they get there.
This thought always made her conscious of the network that adjusted to her movements wherever she went. Somewhere in the heart of things, there was always a heart of things, an automated system routed communications and made sure, most of the time, that important missives arrived where addressed. When private dispatch, they all called it PD, was not needed, stat or viz was available along scrambled sorters and light lines. Off-planet was another matter, especially in these hunted times. Safest to send a reverend mother with memorized message or distrans implant. Every messenger took heavier doses of shear these days. T-probes could read even a dead mind not guarded by shear. Every off-planet message was encrypted, but an enemy might hit on the one-time cover concealing it. Great risk off-planet. Perhaps that was why the rabbi remained silent.
Now why am I thinking such things at this moment?
No word yet from Dortujla? She asked as Tamerlane prepared to enter the dispatch roundelay, where the others in their party waited. So many people. Why so many? Odrade saw Streggy up ahead at the edge of the dock talking to a communications acolyte. There were at least six other people from communications nearby. Tamerlane turned in obvious pique.
Dortujla, we have all said we will notify you the instant we hear.
I was just asking, Tam. Just asking.
Meekly, Odrade followed Tamerlane into dispatch.
I should put a monitor on my mind and question everything that rises there.
Mental intrusions always had a good reason behind them. That was the Bene Gesserit way, as Belonda often reminded her. Odrade felt surprised at herself then, realizing she was more than a little sick of Bene Gesserit ways.
Let Bell worry about such things for a change.
This was a time for floating free, for responding like a will-o'-the-wisp to the currents moving around her. Sea Child knew about currents. Time does not count itself. You have only to look at a circle, and this is apparent. Later the second, the tyrant.
Look! Look what we have come to!
The rabbi wailed. He sat cross-legged on the cold curved floor with his shawl pulled up over his head and almost concealing his face. The room around him was gloomy and resonating with small machinery sounds that made him feel weak. If those sounds should stop. Rebecca stood in front of him, hands on her hips, a look of weary frustration on her face.
Do not stand there like that,
the rabbi commanded. He peered up at her from beneath the shawl.
If you despair, then are we not lost? She asked.
The sound of her voice angered him, and he was a moment putting this unwanted emotion aside.
She dares to instruct me, but was it not said by wiser men that knowledge can come from a weed?
A great shuddering sigh shook him, and he dropped the shawl to his shoulders. Rebecca helped him stand.
A no chamber, the rabbi muttered. In here we hide from...
His gaze searched upward at a dark ceiling.
Better left unspoken even here.
We hide from the unspeakable, Rebecca said.
The door cannot even be left open at Passover, he said.
How will the stranger enter?
Some strangers we do not want, she said.
Rebecca,
he bowed his head.
You are more than a trial and a problem. This little cell of secret Israel shares your exile because we understand that...
Stop saying that! You understand nothing of what has happened to me. My problem? She leaned close to him. It is to remain human while in contact with all of those past lives. The rabbi recoiled.
So you are no longer one of us. Are you a Bene Gesserit, then?
You will know when I'm Bene Gesserit. You will see me looking at myself as I look at myself. His brows drew down in a scowl.
What are you saying?
What does a mirror look at, Rabbi?
Humph. Riddles now.
But a faint smile twitched at his mouth. A look of determination returned to his eyes. He stared around him at the room. There were 8 of them here, more than this space should hold. A no chamber. It had been assembled painstakingly with smuggled bits and pieces, so small. 12.5 meters long. He had measured it himself. A shape like an ancient barrel laid on its side, oval in cross-section and with half-globe closures at the ends. The ceiling was no more than 1 meter above his head. The widest point here at the center was only 5 meters, and the curve of floor and ceiling made it seem even narrower. Dried food and recycled water. That was what they must live on, and for how long? 1 SY, maybe, if they were not found. He did not trust the security of this device, those peculiar sounds in the machinery. It had been late in the day when they crept into this hole, darkness up there now for sure. And where were the rest of his people? Fled to whatever sanctuary they could find, drawing on old debts and honourable commitments for past services. Some would survive. Perhaps they would survive better than this remnant in here. The entrance to the no chamber lay concealed beneath an ash pit with a freestanding chimney beside it. The reinforcing metal of the chimney contained threads of Redulian crystal to relay exterior scenes into this place. Ashes. The room still smelled of burned things, and it already had begun to take on a sewer stink from the small recycling chamber. What a euphemism for a toilet. Someone came up behind the rabbi.
The searchers are leaving. Lucky we were warned in time.
It was Joshua, the one who had built this chamber. He was a short, slender man with a sharply triangular face narrowing to a thin chin. Dark hair swept over his broad forehead. He had widely spaced brown eyes that looked out at his world with a brooding inwardness the rabbi did not trust.
He looks too young to know so much about these things. So they are leaving, the rabbi said. They will be back. You will not think us lucky then.
They will not guess we hid so near the farm, Rebecca said. The searchers were mostly looting.
Listen to the Bene Gesserit, the rabbi said. Rabbi,
what a chiding sound in Joshua's voice.
Have I not heard you say many times that the blessed ones are they who hide the flaws of others even from themselves? Everybody's a teacher now, the rabbi said. But who can tell us what will happen next?
He had to admit the truth of Joshua's words, though.
It is the anguish of our flight that troubles me. Our little diaspora.